I'm Karen Given, and it's time for three stories you should know.
Naaman making the tackle, and
big hit
boy,
there.
Hill collapsing.
Mississippi State running back Kylan Hill took a hard hit to the head in Tuesday's Outback Bowl, and that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by The Athletic's Michael Lee and the Boston Globe's Nora Princiati. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Thanks, Karen. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Kylan Hill took a helmet-to-helmet hit in the Outback Bowl, which is a second-tier bowl for third-place teams. He struggled to get up, staggered a bit on his way to the sidelines, then his body went limp, he was helped to the ground, and because nobody ever learns anything, the team put him back in the game for the final play. The team claims that he was just, quote, woozy, that he never lost consciousness. Fine. Here's our best science on concussions. First of all, it is incredibly dangerous to play a contact sport with a concussion. Also, you don't have to lose consciousness to have a concussion. And in fact, even subconcussive hits, hits that don't actually cause concussions, can cause lifelong, non-treatable brain injuries. We make ourselves feel better about the free labor that student athletes provide by claiming that we're giving them a free education in return. But what use is that if we don't also protect their brains? Nora?
I completely agree with you, Karen. I believe the NCAA's concussion protocol is not quite actually as involved in terms of having independent doctors evaluating what might be a concussion symptom on the sidelines as the NFL's is. But in both cases, I think what's really important is for the framework to be such that if something even looks like it probably could be a concussion, you don't have to have someone forgetting where they are or, you know, not passing through the protocol. Sometimes just the act of a hit to the head should be a symptom of a concussion or a sign that someone might have a concussion. So I would like to see teams sort of adopt that philosophy that just taking the blow in and of itself is enough of a concussion factor to just play it on the safe side.
It was a meaningless bowl game. Like, it was a game that didn't matter. I mean, not that it matters, you know, the scale of the game or the importance. I mean, the player's health should come, even if it was a national championship game. But no one's going to hang a banner over winning the Outback Bowl. The moment you saw the first sign of trouble, you just sit him and then just let it end.
Yeah. And, you know, just kind of coincidentally, the Washington Post had a piece out this week about how the CEO of the Outback Bowl is paid more than $1 million a year. And meanwhile, for putting his brain on the line, Kylan Hill received $550 in gifts. Again, I know there are no easy solutions to this, but we need to do better. Michael, you're up.
Well, for years, WNBA players have fought for fair compensation from their league. WNBA players are sort of really restricted in how much money they can earn on the court. But now, this week, Christy Tolliver, a guard for the Washington Mystics, she brought to light a new dilemma for WNBA players in that they're not only restricted on the court, but if they try to pursue things such as being an NBA assistant, their salary is capped as well. She's paid just $10,000 because the Mystics and the Washington Wizards are both under the same umbrella. Their players can only receive a $50,000 pool. Now, most of that money goes to their biggest star, Elena Deladon, which means that she only gets what's left. This really brought to light a really silly rule that the players agreed to in the last CBA. Players should not be paid like an intern. They should be paid as any other assistant, especially when they put in the work. The WNBA really isn't treating its players fairly.
Yeah, and we should mention that that story was broken by Howard Magdal for the New York Times. Nora, what do you think?
I just think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I know it goes back to the CBA, but I think if we look bigger picture, we see all these things in sports where commissioners and the people who run these leagues can find ways to make exceptions for things when they want to. And the fact that Christy Tolliver is earning $10,000 as an NBA assistant coach, that should be an embarrassment. That should be something that they find a way to fix because it's just absurd.
Yeah, I really wonder what the WNBA's long game is here. I mean, they are actually about to enter into these negotiations, and this was their chance to show that they are reasonable partners in all of this. And instead, they come out looking like they're standing in the way of equality for women, which is not a good look, but it's especially not a good look for a women's sports league. I mean, this is somewhat ridiculous. You know, in every CBA negotiation, the players claim that they're not paid enough, and the league claims that teams are losing money. That's the script. And I'm really worried about that script playing out in this case, because it's going to make the WNBA look bad as a product. And the WNBA is not a bad product. It's a good product, right? And they were just starting to show people, we are putting on a good show. Our fans love us. We are growing and thriving. Former WNBA president Lisa Borders said regular season viewership increased 31% in 2018. So I don't know what the long game is here. Michael, do you have any idea?
Well, I just felt like some rules you don't have to just stick to. And I think in this situation, if the team, the NBA team, wants to hire her as an assistant, then you should take a step back and say, okay, well, she's being viewed as an NBA assistant, not as a WNBA player. Having the opportunity for women to become assistants in the NBA, I think that's something that should be admired and should be encouraged. And this was their opportunity to do that without, you know, holding on to some stupid CBA rule.
Nora, your turn.
We're going to go to Pittsburgh, and I want us to just kind of meditate on what to me is one of the strangest sports news cycles in recent memory. It has to do with Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown, who skipped town before the team's last game of the season. He didn't show up for a walkthrough the Saturday before the game, then had his agent call his coach, Mike Tomlin, to say that he was going to play and able to play. Tomlin said no dice. He shows up for the game, but then leaves, severs contact again. On Wednesday, AB shows up in an Instagram video with former Steelers teammate James Harrison, and they're talking about how they're going to do this big exclusive interview about what happened.
We're going to drop the exclusive. I got it first right here on my boy.
That, at least as of now, has not happened. Then Wednesday evening, Brown shows up on a Fox reality show called The Masked Singer. Now, this was taped in June, but it happens the exact same day that all of this is going down. The Masked Singer is this incredibly bizarre conceptual singing competition show where celebrities disguise themselves and sing for a panel that includes, like, one of the guys from The Hangover's in it. It's weird. Antonio Brown's disguised as a hippo. Everybody's talking all the stuff about me. Why don't they just let me live? He's pretty good.
He's horrible.
You think that's good?
No, I just like that song. It's My Prerogative by Bobby Brown, which is a little bit of an ironic
Bobby Brown play,
song
joke. Antonio Brown.
So all of a sudden, everyone's going, holy smokes, that's Antonio Brown, who's in the middle of this weird drama with the Steelers. So where this leaves us is that the Steelers, they have to figure out what to do. It would be incredibly expensive and difficult to move on from Brown. And I'm curious to hear what you guys think in terms of how it'll play out. But I really also just want us to appreciate how insane this all was. So, Karen, I'll go to you first, but, like, are you processing?
Oh, wow. Wow. You know, I go both ways on this. Like, on the one hand, I laugh at some of the ridiculousness that's gone down, right? And on the other hand, all of it kind of makes me a bit uncomfortable. There's just something about the way that punishment is handed out in sports that feels like putting a toddler into timeout. And in youth sports, it totally makes sense to me. Like if a kid is acting out and you sit him on the bench and you say, think about what you've done, that might work for a 5, 10, 15-year-old. But Antonio Brown is 30 and he's being treated like a child and he's acting like a child. And I'm not really quite sure it matters which came first, you know? So I'm left kind of made uncomfortable every time this comes up. And then it doesn't help that it generally comes up in storylines that have black men at the center of them. And then it's playing into all sorts of other stereotypes. Am I reading too much into this, Michael?
No, I think there are a lot of layers to this, and I think that the silliness is captured in a hippo head. I think that says a lot. but also, one of the things that I think it shows a lot of the issues that are going on in Pittsburgh right now, because they played an entire season without their top running back. You know, Le'Veon Bell sat out the entire year in a holdout, a contract dispute, and you got to wonder, just in terms of leadership, how they can rein things back in. And I think one of the first moves they may have to do is to part ways with Antonio Brown.
I think you're right, Karen, in saying that it doesn't always matter kind of who starts it.
Yeah.
Because when the culture has this weird relationship with punishment and with what's accepted and what isn't, it always comes to a head eventually. So not to be a downer, but I just don't see how this works out in a positive way for anyone. But I hope there's more, you know, reality singing competitions involved in
it.
Oh,
man.
A hippo head, you can't lose with that.
You really can't.
I mean, the thing is, Antonio Brown is an incredible dancer, and, you know, he proved it with his end zone celebration.
Right.
So. He's a natural performer. I wish he knew the lyrics of My Prerogative. I could have liked that performance a little better.
He's no match for the peacock, who was his competition. Smart Money says that's Donny Osmond. So, you know, who can compete with that?
Trying to explain the concept of this show on the radio is one of the most difficult things I've ever attempted to do.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been The Athletic's Michael Lee. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And the Boston Globe's Nora Princiotti. Thank you, Nora.
Absolutely, Karen.